Welcome back to Shattering This. We still have IQ Arwersouli with us. I want to go through the video and talk about some of the reasons that IQ and I have come to the conclusion that it is a fraud for one particular point. And we're going to do this only for one reason. And that is that I've come to the conclusion, and we'll see if IQ agrees, that the only rational reason for acknowledging a fraud would be to expand America's military involvement in Syria and Iraq. Point one, IQ. There's no emotion whatsoever in Foley's voice or in his face. That is not something you would expect from somebody who knows that he is imminently going to die. And there he is, isn't accused of anything, which is completely inconsistent with Islamic beheading videos. Did you notice that?
Yes, I noticed that.
What would be the motivation for Foley to make such a statement? Why would he read it if he hadn't cut a deal with the gentleman standing behind him?
His statement was really very bland. I mean, there was, right. As you said, there was no emotion.
Right.
There was no fear.
Nope.
There was no terror.
Nope.
There was no begging.
Nope.
There was nothing.
Nope. And everyone that I have seen, there's always fear, there's always begging, there's always emotion, and the statements don't go on and on and on. They're short and sweet, and the gang of gaggling in the background accuse the perpetrator of being heinous, and they didn't do that with Foley.
There was nobody behind him except one man. This is unheard of.
Right.
Usually you have 10, 15 people, all camouflaged, all carrying Kalashnikovs or machine guns or whatever, and banners. There were no banners.
And therefore, there were no witnesses.
Yeah.
And that's what's key. And therefore, there were no witnesses. And it, by the way, because all Islamic beheading videos are the same, and this one is completely different, is really important because Muslims are conditioned to behave in a certain way. And when they don't behave in that way, there's something seriously wrong. Muslims are stunningly easy to predict because they're conditioned in a certain way. This was not shot out. This was shot out in the open in broad daylight, not in a closed, dark room. Now, I have seen some beheadings outdoors, but they're only outdoors if they're surrounded by hundreds upon hundreds of people and they're designed to be a spectacle. Otherwise, they're all shot inside.
Yes, there were no Allahu Akbar either. When Muslims slaughter an animal, and the human being is an animal, they have to shout takbir, Allahu
right.
Akbar.
They literally have to. Right. They have to. They were ordered by Muhammad to shout Allahu Akbar when they commit a terrorist act. Now, terror is indispensable from and indistinguishable from Islam. Muhammad said, I have been made victorious with terror. And
right.
And Muhammad ordered Muslims to shout Allahu Akbar as they performed what I think is their single most vicious terrorist raid, and that was against the Kabar Jews, where they eliminated Jews from within camel ride of Medina and Mecca. And he ordered them to shout Allahu Akbar, which means Allah is the oldest, the biggest, and the greatest. And older than who? Greater than who? Bigger than who?
By the way, with all due respect,
yeah.
It's not greatest.
Yeah,
A'zam, in Arabic, A'zam, this is my language.
Yes.
A'zam is great. Akbar is bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger or older. For example,
right.
If I am the head of the family and the oldest child, let's
mm-hmm.
say, they call me Akbar. The Akbar child. The
right.
Akbar. But never the greatest. This is bullcrap.
Yeah.
The word Akbar is not great. A'zam is great. Why? For example, Britain, Great Britain, is called Britannia al-Uzma. Not al-Kubra, not al-Akbar, al-Uzma. But they deliberately change it to great. This
well,
is a deliberate falsification of the language. Akbar means bigger, physically or in age, and nothing else.
Right, yeah. And bigger would be mightier in size. What Muhammad was trying to convey to the Muslims, and when he ordered them to say this, is that the Jews knew that God was Yahweh. And His claim was that his God was bigger, was older. An older God means the original God was bigger, the original God, mightier. That's what he's trying to convey. And it's and the terms are not like so many people says God is great. It's a comparative term. It's bigger, older.
It's bigger. It's not great. Right.
Yes.
By the way, it's called the terror verse, even in Arabic.
Right.
It's called the terror verse. Allahu Akbar is the terror verse. And they use it 24 hours a day.
Right.
They're shooting a bullet, they call Allahu Akbar. They shoot a rocket, it's Allahu Akbar. Before they shoot it, while it's flying, and while it's landing, Allahu Akbar.
There has never been
Allahu Akbar.
There has never been a display of Islamic terrorism without shouting Allahu Akbar. It is mandated. It is mandated in the hadith. And therefore, to have an execution, a beheading, without screaming, chanting Allahu Akbar, means that this is a fraud. That alone. All you have to do is know Islam.
The thing about it is insipid. There is nothing there that shows it Islamic. Nothing.
Was there
Islamic
a single Quran?
Shouting, screaming, blood-curdling, hate-mongering, war-mongering. This was nothing there.
Allah's name was not even mentioned. There were no Quran or hadith quotes. I have seen every act of Islamic terrorism that I've seen perpetrated. There's a quotation from the hadith and or the Quran or both.
Yes.
Never.
Boko Haram.
Right.
Every time you see him on television, he's quoting.
Correct.
The two guys, the two Africans who converted from Christianity to Islam and murdered a British civilian who was a soldier originally.
Right.
They were not only trying to cut his head off, they're quoting from the Quran to justify their action.
Correct. It's what they do.
But there's no, there was nothing.
Muslims are always emotional. They're always enraged. Always. Particularly when they're about to commit a heinous act. Was there any emotion, any rage in the actor's voice?
No, nothing. Nothing.
Were there any Islamic banners or propaganda which exists in all of the other beheading videos?
This is the most remarkable thing. If he is ISIS, if he is IS, should have been the black flag with Allah on the top, Rasul in the middle, and Muhammad in the bottom.
Right.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah, Allah's prophet, Muhammad. The actor's hand is on Foley's mouth, rather than pulling the head back by being on the forehead. The whole experience for a Muslim is to hear the infidel that's about to die, that's dying at their hands, scream in agony. Do they ever put their hands over their mouth?
Yeah, no. As I said, the gurgling noise. They want to hear the gurgling noise when they cut his throat.
Right. And by the way, if you put a hand over the mouth where his hand is, all Foley would have to do is open his mouth and bite a man's finger off.
Absolutely.
Never
put it on the mouth.
Never. Muslims who saw off a head with a knife crave the sounds of the infidel begging for their life, struggling to live, and then choking on their own blood. That is a religious experience. It reveals their collective need for superiority, their personal desire for dominance, and their ability to control those who have previously enjoyed freedom. Muslims cannot experience these things any other way. Islam is a death cult. It thrives on killing. And yet none of this was seen in the video.
It's ironic. The length of the dagger. He had a dagger. I have a Rambo dagger.
Mm-hmm.
Literally a Rambo one. Bigger than the one he had. And more appropriate to cut a throat. The one he had, it was a dagger just to kill, to stab.
Right. Oh, I mentioned that yesterday, that it's not the kind of a knife that any Muslim has ever used to cut off someone's head.
Absolutely not. It's impossible.
The blood in the video comes from the chin and from the back of the head, not the throat, revealing that it was just burst bags of pretend blood. There's absolutely no cut on the throat. He saws back and forth on the throat. Is there any cut on that throat?
No. Most important, as I said to you in my email, in Iraq, when we used to go to a butcher and choose a chicken, they had to butcher it. They had to cut the chicken's head off. So, I mean, I know what blood looks like. I know how much blood comes out. Mm-hmm. There was less blood from this guy than the blood of a chicken.
Right. And you're talking about the artery that pumps blood up to the head.
Should have been a gallon of
all over the place.
All
over the place. The image of the body with the head propped on it in the end was not part of the video. It was a panned photograph. And when you look at the place where the head was supposed to be, there's all sorts of evidence that it was photoshopped.
Photoshopped.
Yeah. Photoshopped out of that position.
So we come to the conclusion.
Yes.
If the head of the most powerful nation on earth goes on television, that's the Obamination.
Yes.
I can't even pronounce it.
The Obamination.
The Obamination goes and speaks with such anger that he is disgusted. How is it possible that the FBI, the CIA, and all the intelligence services said it's authentic?
And they know it's not.
It's authentic.
And they know it's not. Now, by the way, they wouldn't know it's not for the reasons that we're stating. They don't study Islam. If you study Islam in the CIA or the NSA, and you make a statement based upon the fact that you say this does not have consistency with Islamic behavior, you'll be fired. So they aren't going to differentiate it the way that we have. But I've reviewed yesterday late the sites of a half dozen people who are videographers, who are experts in filmmaking, and all of them came to the same conclusions, but for different reasons, that it's obvious that this whole thing is faked from a video and photography point of view. And so the CIA does have, as well as NSA, as well as the White House, specialists who could easily affirm that. So Obama knows for certain, as do we, that this was a fraud perpetrated. So why? Why acknowledge the fraud?
Good question.
You know, and they answered the question both yesterday and today. Hagel, Secretary of Defense, came and said, you know, we have to destroy the Islamic State. We have to obliterate them. And the only way to do so is to recognize there is now a non-existent border between Iraq and Syria, and therefore we need to deal with them in Syria. It's a context to greater war. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So you may wonder, with Christians being annihilated after the U.S. invasion, with the population of Christians going from 1.3 million down to maybe a few tens of thousands, why is it that the Obamination needs a faked execution of a single individual to justify broadening the war? Well, you know, the United States didn't engage when the Christians were being annihilated. We did engage ever so modestly when the Zoroastrians, the exaggerated fate of the Zoroastrians was being presented. But this is an American. This is an American with a name. This is an American in the media. And there's another American that's also held hostage whose fate rests on what the Americans do. And so this is being used as the pretext to broadening the war. What happened the last time that we invaded and attacked a Islamic country, IQ? How well did it turn out for us?
It never turned out good.
No.
You have never succeeded
in
invading any Islamic country.
No.
It always ended up in disaster.
And every time we bomb, do we manufacture more Muslims?
Sorry?
I said, when we bomb, do we manufacture more Muslims or kill more Muslims?
Well, you kill some, but you manufacture more.
Yeah. They actually don't manufacture Muslims. What you manufacture is jihadists, but Muslims aren't
that's
jihadists.
That's what we meant. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so, did we not break your country, Iraq, by bombing it? And is not bombing then the counterproductive? I mean, haven't we been through this before, and didn't we learn anything?
No. You bombed Iraq into the Stone Age. You bombed Libya into the Stone Age. You bombed Syria into the Stone Age. You bombed Afghanistan into the Stone Age. But no, you haven't learned anything.
We actually haven't bombed Syria into the Stone Age. That's the reason why this.
No, sorry,
this,
I'm getting.
But no, that's what's no, that's what it's really important. We bombed Libya back into the Stone Age, and now it's just a living hellhole of jihadists. We bombed Iraq into the Stone Age, and now it's a hellhole of competing jihadists. We bombed Afghanistan back into the Stone Age, and it's now nothing but confronting jihadists. But Syria, we have not yet bombed into the Stone Age.
Well,
Obama wants a shot.
Already.
Obama wants it. Well, because of the weapons we've provided, it is. You look at it; it's worse than the Stone Age. But Obama wants a shot. We are going to start bombing in Syria. Mark my words.
Well, I don't know if the Russians will agree with him.
You know, I
don't
think
the Russians are sitting down and letting Obama get away with it.
You
I can't
know,
see Putin doing that.
You know, you just said something that stirs a connection for me. You know, the whole episode in Ukraine, this has been the United States instigating that war, and we're blaming the war on Putin, even though it's the United States that's funding the war and has started the civil war there. And we've marginalized Putin by blaming him for what America is doing. Maybe Obama really got upset when Putin precluded Obama from engaging in bombing Syria back during the fraud of the chemical weapons episode.
Yeah.
And now he has marginalized Russia to the point that he knows Russia won't engage. So now he has his excuse and his pretext and a free hand to start bombing in Syria, and Russia's been neutralized. Maybe he is that smart and that evil.
This is impossible that Obama is smart. It is impossible. Obama is smart.
Conniving.
100% score in destroying America with the help of Americans.
Yes, true.
He's smart. Outside the destruction of America, he is not smart. He's a stupid man. And the records prove it. All the allies of America now don't give a damn about America. They don't trust America. And I talk about all the allies. Nothing to do with Israel alone. The Saudi Arabians, the Qataris, all of the Arabs don't trust Obama or his America. And not a single nation on earth has any respect for America. Look what the Latin Americans are doing.
Right.
Look at here. Pipsqueak nations. They're going against America.
Right. And you know what is interesting is when America started to attack Russia and to put sanctions on Russia, what Russia did immediately is embrace all of the overtures from South America and Central America to do business with Russia. Russia is coming out of this better than they went into it, and America is losing its economic base all around the world because of what Obama
China
did.
China is taking. And Russia is taking. China is taking, and Russia is taking, and America is losing.
And Europe and America are back into the recession because of the economic sanctions, and the rest of the world is profiting at our expense. I have a hunch that the maneuver with Russia is directly tied to Putin's preclusion of bombing Damascus a year or so ago, and now he has his justification with Putin sidelined. I think he is that evil. Thank you, IQ Arvasuli.
Thank you, sir.
It's always wonderful to discuss these things with you. Welcome back to Standard Miss. We're going to peruse some emails that have come our way and attempt to provide some answers to those who listen to the program and therefore will benefit from the answers as we discuss them. We still have Kirk on the line, so he's going to help me through this process. The first one is Yada. I'm almost finished reading Yada Ya, and all I can say is, wow. The words make me incredibly angry, sad, and happy all at once. Angry only because it has been hidden from everyone for so long. I do turn into your radio show, and I'm also catching up on the ones that I've missed, thanks to the RichardsBlessYahweh.com site. Kirk, that was my reaction. Angry, sad, and elated.
All
of the above. And we're angry because we know that people who claim to be speaking for God have deliberately withheld this from us. So the natural thing is to be angry at them.
Yes, sir.
Sad was my next response because I realized how many people had died thinking that their loved ones, where they'd meet up with their loved ones in heaven. They've gone to funerals and say, you know, they're up there in heaven looking down on us. They've been promised a bill of goods and they've died, their souls no longer existing. I was sad for how many people have been beguiled by the trash that we find in religion.
Yes. As well, you know, you think about your mother, if your mother's passed away,
right,
your father, your relatives,
yes,
or whatever, and,
yes,
and we all bought the same, we all drank the same Kool-Aid, we all going to see them all again, and all that sort of thing. And
yeah,
when you really, it cannot happen, therefore, it's extremely tragic.
Yeah, it's sad. Yep, it's tragic. What a waste. And then you're happy because the covenant family is like the Garden of Eden. You know what Gan Eden means in Hebrew?
Well, good to say it. I'm going blank all of a sudden.
Okay, Gan Eden. Yeah, you've heard this and I'm sure know this, but Gan is a protective enclosure, and Eden means of great joy.
Of great joy.
And so what we find is that when we engage in the covenant and actually get to know Yahweh as our Heavenly Father, as He really is, and participate in His family, it is pure happiness.
Sure.
And not fake. I mean, genuine, really comfortable happiness, you know?
You know, I was even happy just to know what the truth was. I mean, even
yeah,
if it resulted in nothing, I would just, well, it's nice to finally know the truth.
It is. It's uplifting. It's like this huge weight has been taken off you when you know what's not true and what is true. And she says, okay, I have a few questions to keep me awake at night, and I wish I could call into the program, but I have three young children who won't cooperate for more than 2 minutes. Now, by the way, on this program, I think the vast preponderance of our listeners would definitely work their way through young children acting like young children. I mean, it's the covenant is about family, and a mom trying to deal with her children, even who won't cooperate for a couple of minutes, we've all been there, is not going to be an irritant for anyone really who listens to this program. We're about family. Children's voices are not an irritant to our ears. It says, however, I will call once school starts. Okay. Here is the first one. He says, my concern of sending my oldest to school. It says, a thing that my child is even questioning. My kindergartner asked me why they are forcing her to say the Pledge of Allegiance and the National Anthem, looking at the flag, standing at attention, every day at school.
Mm. Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, I did it blindly. And why are we pledging allegiance to a flag? Shouldn't we be pledging our allegiance to the covenant?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you pledge allegiance to a flag?
Well, worse than that, I grew up in Australia, and we had to sing God Save the Queen every morning before we could go into class. And not doing it, you get hit on the head. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, even worse. Or as bad.
Yeah, you could get caned by the teacher.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Pledging one's allegiance. Why? Okay, so here's some of the questions. He says, do you think that some people, those who are born of the serpent, you know, demon-possessed, are born without a conscience? As you know, Kirk, and you're one of probably one in a million people that know this. So it's maybe 1,000 people, maybe 7,000 people on Earth potentially could know this. That when Yahweh was talking about the uniqueness of Adam, the only thing that differentiates Adam from all other animals is a nesama, which is a conscience, different than the consciousness. Consciousness is the soul that gives you the ability as an animal to observe and respond to the environment. But a conscience, it gives you the ability to be discerning, to be judgmental, to exercise good judgment. Do you think that, first of all, what percentage of people do you think actually know that there's a difference between conscience and consciousness?
I doubt if they get it. You know, they just, this generic soul has kind of become a generic thing. But, I mean, I didn't even think about animals really having a soul in that sense, but I mean, all the animals do.
And, yeah, according to Yahweh. But and it makes sense because they, you know, that what the soul does is it enables you to observe what's happening around you and respond to it, which is why we have a soul consciousness. It's a powerful thing.
But the Nefesh is, you know, they were animal type people in the sense that they did not have a Nefesh. So I mean, you could have them. You could have a human being without it, but I don't think anyone's born with it. Without it, you can just become deadened, like a mafia guy, you know, a hitman or something, becomes deadened to everything after a while.
Yeah, that's my view too. But there was a period. There was a period of time where that was not the case. I mean, Adam was not the first man. He was the first man created in God's image with a nesama or a conscience, but he was not the first human. Humans have lived for somewhere around 100 million years. And so there were humans that were populating the world as animals before Yahweh gave one unique animal, Adam, the man, a conscience, which is absolutely a requirement for Yahweh to be able to engage with him. If you don't have this ability to differentiate between right and wrong and make informed choices and exercise good judgment, you know, it's, for God's point of view, it's just like playing with an ant. You know, you know, why would you create the universe if all you've got is you know, talking to or trying to communicate with a an animal that you can't even speak to?
No, so, it didn't. No sense to it at all.
So there were lots of them, and then Adam and Chawa and Cain then were booted out of the garden. And between Adam, Chawa, and Cain, and there may have been a daughter that's just unnamed, but collectively they gave birth to other children, and the other children they gave birth to inherited the Nesama in a place that all other Homo sapiens didn't have one. So there was a period of time where there was a blend of those who had one and didn't have one. And then what Yahweh did with the flood is he wiped out all humans save eight with a Nesama, which means the rest of the world, there would have been lots of people without a conscience and just eight with it.
Yeah. And, of course, Cain also, when he joined with those, because he had nowhere to go after he killed his brother, he obviously impregnated women, and they became, and their children would have come with a Nesama because they will come for them.
Correct. And when a man with a conscience, the ability to exercise judgment, as it turns out, became much more lethal, much more conniving, much worse, which is why Yahweh had to do the flood to have a reboot and start over again, because we became so powerfully corrupt with our Nesama. So there was a period of time, again, after the flood 5,000 years ago, where there would have been a fair amount of people with and without a Nesama, more without than with. But the Nesama was such an asset that those without the Nesama 5,000 years ago would have begun to succumb. They just would not be able to compete. So is there the possibility that there are people alive today that did not inherit a Nesama from the eight who disembarked the
ark? Well, theoretically, there could have been somebody that crossed the Great Divide, you know, and took off somewhere. But I think it's fairly highly unlikely at this point because so many populations have been discovered and intermarried and so forth. So it would be difficult to prove that. Yeah.
Okay, our conclusions are the same. I think it is definitely possible. I think it is unlikely. So that would be our answer. Now, she asks, do maybe the elite bloodlines not have a conscience? I just wonder, because those who know about Yahweh, why would they consciously choose to follow the adversary when they know they will spend eternity in Sheol? Now, in this case, Gurkha, I'm going to tell you what my opinion is and get yours. I don't think there's anyone who is an elitist that does not have a Nesama. I just think their Nesama is dysfunctional. I think to get to a position of power, you have to have the conniving that a conscience would provide, because it's more than just a sense of a moral compass. It gives you a vastly superior ability to compete because of the processes of your brain, the ability to reason. But I don't think that there is a single person who is chosen to be with the adversary who actually knows Yahweh. Now, HaSatan knows Yahweh, but he's not a person. I don't think there's a single person alive that actually knows Yahweh who has chosen to be with the adversary. So I would say the answer to this situation is no, not on on any basis.
Well, one possibility comes to mind is let's go back to Cain and Abel.
Okay.
Now, you know, Adam and Chawa had to have instructed their children, and we know they knew it because Cain and Abel came to celebrate, and I'm assuming it's Passover because Abel came with a lamb, and Cain decided to do it his own way. He didn't like the deal, so he came in and consciously brought fruit or food or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was, of course, he was rejected, and that's what started the whole thing with the fight.
Right.
And, you know,
so
he must have known a lot about Yahweh at that point, and he consciously chose not to do it. You know, he's going to do it his way. He ain't going to do it God's way. So, so in that regard, you know, he knew enough to know better.
You're right up to one point. He did reject Yahweh. He did not choose HaSatan. My point was, there's no one who actually knows Yahweh, and Cain knew him, who would go so far not just to reject Yahweh, many have done that, but to actually choose HaSatan. Welcome back to Shattering Myths, having a conversation with Kirk, answering a letter on some points brought up in a letter. Kirk, your example was a great example of someone who knew who Yahweh was, parents had told him, and then rejected Yahweh. But I don't think there's any indication that Cain said, well, you know, I think that I want to side with and start working with Satan. So he didn't go quite that far.
That's fair enough. No, that's fair enough.
Yeah, so I think it's a great point for you to have raised, but I don't think that there's anyone in power anywhere in the world who knows Yahweh who has said, you know, the heck with it, I think I'm going to side with Satan.
Well, you would certainly hope not.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that decided to side with Satan, but and I'm not even sure that many of the people who have done so, like the Abominator, I don't think that that he sees himself as in league with the adversary. It's just that everything he says and does supports the adversary. Yeah,
I would
agree with that. She makes the statement, the writer of this letter. I am making the assumption that top political and religious leaders know the truth. And my answer to that, Kirk, would be that they know the truth on some topics. They don't know the truth about the Torah. They don't know the truth about Yahweh. They don't know the truth about the covenant. They don't know the truth about Yahusha. They don't know the truth about the invitation to be with God. They know the truth about, for example, the direct connection between Islam and terrorism. Obama knows that he lied on behalf of Islam when he made his statements about the video. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Obama knows he's lying when he accuses Putin of going back to the Cold War tactics when it's Obama himself is doing that. And they know they're lying in those cases, but they don't know the truth in terms of Yahweh. Do you think that'd be fair?
Oh, yeah. And just real quickly, the Ukraine has to be in a distraction so he could do his thing back in the Middle East. I mean, you've written enough history of Roman tactics at this point that, you know, that's a pretty good tactic. I think it came out of the Pentagon. I don't think Obama came up with it.
I don't know who came up with it, but now that I realize how desperately Obama and the Pentagon wanted to engage in Syria and that Putin precluded them from having their expanded war, which is what the Pentagon wanted, which is what Obama wanted, by bombing Syria, and how now this the setup in Ukraine has enabled them to do that, and that's what they're going to start doing. It's really hard not to make the connection. I am convinced. And I didn't really put this together until today, but, boy, it's obvious.
Well, I kind of thought of that as a distraction, but my problem with that is, and not to get away from your letter, but just for a moment, if the goal is to keep having these wars with these Islamic countries, it's not like we're taking sides on in regards to we want to wipe out the Shias and turn everything over to our so-called friends, the Saudis, that are Sunni, they're indiscriminate. I mean, what's the end game? What do you gain? I mean,
Both Sunnis and Shias are opposed to Christians, Jews, and agnostics, which means they're all opposed to the United States. So we're not going to prevail and winning favor with any of them. And if we engage, for example, against the Islamic State, then we're engaging on behalf of Iran and Shia Islam against Sunni Islam, and that most certainly isn't in our interest.
No, that's not going to win any curry any favors in Saudi Arabia. I mean, my God, they're supporting them, although they might be afraid of them now. And
afraid of them now, but they do not want them completely wiped out, because otherwise the balance of power stays in the favor of the Shiites. So to answer this woman's question, the mom's question here, conversation was excellent. The elitists, those in positions of power, whether they be journalists or academicians or politicians or generals, they know that they're lying about their subject matter. They know that.
Mm-hmm.
But they do not know the truth about the Torah, covenant, or Yahweh. So there is a distinction that needs to be made there. Now, there are some Christian pastors that know that they're lying on behalf of Christianity, but they still don't know God. They know that Christmas and Easter and the Trinity and Jesus and Christ and all of that New Testament gospel of grace, they know that's all false.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean they know Yahweh. So it depends on the topic. Also, she says they actively practice satanic rituals, and does that allow the demonic spirit to truly enter their body? I don't see many people practicing demonic rituals, actually. And I think that's because Satan has no interest in the practice of demonic rituals. Satan doesn't want to be worshipped as Satan. He doesn't want people paying attention to him as the adversary. He wants to be God.
Yeah.
And so very few of those in league with Satan worship him as Satan.